Well, hello, everybody. It's 1:05 a.m. on Thursday, May 17th, 2018. We're not driving a car. We're not walking around in the wind. We are relaxing on a couch after watching just a great hockey team, the Vegas Golden Knights, beat the Winnipeg Jets in Game 3 at home in Vegas. I had a lot of fun. I guess apparently we're going to all be legally being able to bet on games perhaps soon. They overturned the federal ban on betting on sports just earlier this week. And so whether you do it legally or not, maybe it's all legally now. Who knows? At least some things that could have been predicted if Trump became president have come true. And that one I would have assumed would have happened. Now, there's a million other things going on. But, yeah, all right. I got so much to talk about. But, let's keep going down this path because this is what I wanted the pod to be about anyway. It's going to be about money, 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 money. Yes. Cash flow. Money. Worth. One kind of wants to equate value or money or accumulated wealth. You know, you look at it, see some old rich guy and you're like, well, yeah, that guy's got it made. He's loaded like that. Like that guy's got some confidence. He's made it in life. He should be respected. He's got a lot of money. Or the flip side, you see someone begging on the street for enough money to go get themselves something to eat, aka probably a 40-ouncer, standing out on the median at a red light, sunburnt and unshaven. And you think that guy doesn't have any money. That guy doesn't have any net worth. He doesn't have it going on. He shouldn't really be respected. Right? And there's a lot of logic in both of those thoughts, specifically on looking at the one who supposedly this guy doesn't deserve respect that's begging for money. If you're in a position where you're out there begging on the street, running around from car to car, you're probably not in good shape. Now, you may not be a bad person, but you've certainly had something go wrong. And that's an accumulated effect. You don't just all of a sudden one day wake up and have to be on a curb. It doesn't really work like that. It's months and years and oftentimes a whole childhood in the making that creates that. And so that's one type of person that winds up without a lot of accumulated wealth or net worth and doesn't really perform well in society if that's the end result. There are other people, I've known people, especially at different types and different ages in your life, different periods in your life, where you can run around without any money and be a totally great person and appropriate for which, like you say you are, you're just out of college and you're going to go and you're going to teach English in, you know, the Philippines or something on some exchange program where they're hardly going to pay you any money. They're going to give you $1,000 stipend a month and free housing, or you're going to live with one of the kids' parents. And they're going to pay for just the bare necessities and you're never going to have a dime and you're going to still be trying to pay off student loans and other debt and God knows what else. Right. And you have a slightly negative net worth and your cash flow is terrible because you're hardly making any money, but you're doing, you know, you're traveling and you're meeting people and it's probably a positive experience, but it's certainly tough. Are you a bad person? No, actually, you're teaching English in other parts of the world where that is a foundational skill that is going to be a necessity in the global market community as we share a language of some sort. And English is also the language of coding for the most part. So you have to know English, right? So you should be teaching and spreading English, I think. Now, totally great person that doesn't have any money, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean whether or not you have money or not. It should determine your overall well-being and net emotional worth or confidential, you know, how much confidence you have in an account in your head about how good you feel about what you're doing and the impact you have on the world. It doesn't always have to be tied to finances, but still, I think we have a a superficial tendency to judge by worth, and also to attribute certain worth to certain people. You know, we hear things, you're like, oh, Vin Diesel's making $20 million a movie. So now every time I see Vin Diesel, I know he's sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, you'd think, right? Just the way you kind of think. Now, so there are really, really wealthy people, and one of the go-to like defenses or public belief about our president is that he is a very wealthy man. He is a billionaire. People say he's a billionaire. Trump says he's a billionaire. Which, if you're trying to pass that off and make people think something about that statement, they're trying to make people think that, hey, he's got billions of dollars, he's so rich, it don't matter, right? I ain't got time for that. He's got billions of dollars. He can literally do anything he wants. Why would he want to be president? He's got billions of dollars. Well, you could say, well, somebody like Elon Musk has billions of dollars. Elon Musk richer than Donald Trump, by the way. Jeff Bezos richer than Donald Trump, by the way. Ken Braverman richer than Donald Trump, by the way. What? What? Who? Ken Braverman's richer than... Yeah, how many billions do you have, Ken? My answer is I actually have a negative net worth, believe it or not. Most people who know me would believe it. I have a negative net worth. My assets, cash, property owned, everything subtracted by all the money I owe is negative. Now, many people, many people are in this boat. If you own a home, oftentimes you will have a negative net worth, even though you have equity at home. Because I mean, if you sign a dotted line and you buy a $500,000 home and you put $50,000 down, and those were the only transactions you had in life somehow, and you had no job and no nothing else and no bank account, and the loan was just starting, you in the inception of time, in the big bang of your economic life here, you would have a net worth of negative $450,000. You'd have a home. You'd only have $50,000 in equity in it. I'm sorry, your net worth would actually be negative $400,000, right? Because you got $450,000 left on the loan and you have $50,000 in equity. So if you had to sell the house now, what am I talking about? I can't do this math in my head right now. I think your net worth is negative $450,000. Yeah, because it was it's a $500,000 number. I think you have $450,000 left. Anyway, point is I think it's negative $400,000, right? Because you've got, I'm sorry, I'm boring everyone, even myself. I just want to figure this out. So this is how to solve the problem. Let's get through this. We have 17 minutes to do this podcast. The house was $500,000, right? Let's say you had no money. This is how you solve the problem. Attack it from the extremes. Let's say you had no down payment and you immediately bought a house. You would have this asset, supposedly, because you're owner of the house, but you owe a lot on the mortgage. And then you're going to make those payments every month. So immediately you're setting yourself up for a debt of $500,000 in a home that has a value. Sorry, we didn't talk about the value of the home like this. Let's say that your home just went to zero. This was a terrible example, and I apologize for making this a home example. But let's make it much easier and more relevant. Let's say that you have credit card debt and you have a bank account. Easy, right? If you have $1,000 of credit card debt and you have $500 in your bank account, your net worth is negative $500 because you outspent how much money you had. Okay, that was so simple. You just do that to begin with. Okay, so I have a negative net worth and I just told you that I am richer than Donald Trump. So what am I saying? I'm saying his net worth is a whole lot less. And he's not only not a billionaire, he's an anti-billionaire. He owes billions of dollars to other countries, other people. And that's how he rolls. Now, the reason why he doesn't show that, actually, he does show that and how he acts and who he's taken money from recently and what he's been doing. But you don't see it. You see him like having a plane and having his face on stake and a board game. And you see his name on a bunch of buildings. And you're like, wow, this guy must be doing well. And the answer is, it's all a scam. It's all a charade. It's all smoke and mirrors. And he does licensing deals and he has no real substance. It's funny that his business, in a lot of ways, is so devoid of substance. It's just putting the word Trump on a building and calling it Trump and having seedy ways of doing your accounting so that you'll mess with international banking laws and governments and everything else. There's also that part of his business, which is so terrible. Now, he hides it, though, because he extracts cash out of his loans and then he doesn't pay back his loans. That's why he's had 6 bankruptcies. That's why people like Paul Manafort got busted for not paying back. I think it was Ogmechin, one of the other Russians, not paying him back $18 million because he said he was going to do something in Ukraine, never did it, or took the money for some real estate thing and then never gave it back. Manafort's such a seedy bastard, right? Trump has been operating like that, and that's why you find yourself filing for bankruptcy and always on the run because you're overspending at strip joints and on coke. You know, like that's basically how you live that life. Now, I did a podcast a while ago called "The Cocaine Lifestyle." I think I mentioned that. It was funny. Trump lives that way, so he's always running by the seat of his pants, right? Well, he keeps borrowing more and more and more. And this time he's borrowing more and more and more from the Russians through Deutsche Bank, through letting them utilize his properties to make purchases and trying to wash their money out of Russia into the United States and into the Western banking system. And he's been doing all of this. And through that process of taking all these loans and then overspending and being a moron, he accumulated over $1 billion worth of debt. It's all over the place, right? And now he's trying to take advantage of his position to get whole himself, because he desperately needs to do that because he's massively in debt and he's of course running around scared. And this has been a major problem with him for years. I mean, you can see he used to push the whole Obama's birth certificate thing who does this? Running around talking about birth certificate stuff because the Russians were lending him money, telling him go out there like a clown and do this. And he just danced like a clown and he's still doing it today. He's still dancing for them because what else can he do? They are his livelihood. That's the problem with having your president being bought off by foreign nations and majorly Russia, but also other ones as well. Having a huge chunk of his own personal, you think this guy's a billionaire. And it turns out he's massively in debt to everybody else, mostly the Russians. So, wait a minute. I thought he was rich. I thought he's got it all figured out. No, he's a pawn. He's a bitch for them because they own him. And he's screwed. And that's why he won't do anything for us. He just lies to us. He's a professional liar. So, all right. So the money thing, why money is important, even though I wish it wasn't. Is when money's dictating your decisions, you're in bad shape. When it's always about money. And with Trump, it's got to be always about money. And he doesn't have what he says he has. So he's not acting like a guy who doesn't have a care in the world and has got his billions of dollars and can do just what he wants for America. He's acting like a guy who's running scared and owes a bunch of money to our arch nemesis in the former Soviet Union. And I caught whiffs of a lot of Rachel Maddow and Ari Melber, and that's what I caught tonight. I listened to a lot on the radio, on the drive. I listened to a lot of just streaming random stuff all the way back on YouTube and everything. And that auto run on YouTube is fantastic when it really gets you in the right topic. And what I can tell you is, people are starting to stand up and realize that they don't care anymore. This is not okay. And the release of the SAR, I wanted to call this pod, Trump almost finally cured SARS. SAR stands for Suspicious Activity Report, which is something that banks will file into a FinCEN database, financial enforcement network or whatever, enforcement crimes unit. That when, you know, it's like there's $100,000 payments going back and forth in random LLCs that have just been set up, they flag it and they're like, what the hell's going on here? Like, this is not the way business is done. What's up? And they flag it and they log it so that people can go look at it later when someone, you know, when they're like, all right, well, let's start going through the FinCEN database. Let's see who was sending $500,000 to Michael Cohen today. And I think we should have that. Because there's legitimate money and not legitimate money. We should monitor how monitoring the banking system is good and healthy for all of us, because we want to know what's going on. If fraud is being perpetuated, it's nakedly obvious this way. So what happened was one of the SARs was found and was released. And that's how we heard about the AT&T payments, the Novartis payments, the Korean Aerospace payments, other things in Michael Cohen's bank. Michael Avenatti, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, has not released all of that stuff yet. However, all of a sudden it became an issue and I hadn't really thought about it. Who leaked this? I thought it was from Avenatti. The answer is no, this was not all from Avenatti. Somebody leaked it to Avenatti. Avenatti did not get this in the course of discovery in the trial, which I thought he did. He did not. He got it from somebody else, and it was somebody who was searching through the FinCEN database and found this SAR report, the suspicious activity report. And they saw it referenced to other suspicious. It also accessed to other suspicious activity reports related to Michael Cohen's Essential Consultants account. And those other two SARs, that's why I should just call them SARs, those other two SARs were missing and they're not in the database anymore. Now, this employee then decided to leak the one that they found, fearing that, hey, what if the administration is deleting these from the database? That's what this guy must have been thinking. Is what if the administration is deleting all these, trying to hide their evidence? I want to, before this one gets deleted, I just want to leak it out so everyone can see it. That's probably what was going through his or her mind. I think it was a him. I hope it was a her, but whatever. I don't know why I hope it was a her. But okay, so I don't know about that. I don't think that that's happening. I do think that the two other ones were pulled from the system by somebody. I mean, they had to be. Were they pulled because they're top secret and they hold like the names of certain Russian people that we don't want released, or other people that we don't want released yet? And like maybe some of this money was going to Sean Hannity or something. Oh God, that would be crazy. It's interesting to think about where the money was going and also what money was coming in. The SARs would probably have information about both of those things in them. And Trump hasn't cured SARs if he was trying to do that. I won't accuse him of deleting those. That's a stretch. That's because why would you just delete them? Like, a bank is, here's the thing. Oh, sorry. Rachel might ask a question, which is where I wanted to finish with on this podcast, is I'm going to answer a question for Rachel. Rachel wanted to know, as she had Ronan Farrow on, who was explaining this, who had broken this story and talked to the source of the person who released the information, which makes me think it was in the New York office, but whatever. I'm just going to speculate out of my ass here. Now, Rachel asked a question, and she was talking about the SARS. Had anyone ever done this before? You know, how does this happen? What would be the protocol for things like that? And I'll tell you what. And how did other people know about payments and stuff, whatever. I can't remember her total exact question, but I remember what I wanted to explain to her about the way the SARs work and the way the database would work, which would be, as a bank, when you notice that you have a transaction set in a company like this that you think something's up with, you're going to craft your report and you're going to submit it to the FinCEN database and you're going to press submit. And the copy of your SAR is going to go into the database and it's supposed to stay there. It's not supposed to get deleted everywhere if it's been accepted into the thing. Even if it's something that's submitted in error and should be deleted because it's pointless and useless, there may be protocols for data retention stuff in place where they actually keep a copy of this, you know, mal submitted thing that had nothing in it or didn't matter, but they at least keep a copy of it around. It never fully gets deleted from the system, but it can be flagged as irrelevant or it can be flagged as not approved or whatever else, right? But it's still, it's kind of like a journal entry in an accounting ledger where if you screw up when you post an entry, you can't just delete it. You actually have to make a reversing entry so that there's a record that you did something, you thought it was right at some point, and then you realized it was wrong and you changed it. It's about keeping track of the path of thought as well as the actual results and display of the numbers. So when the SAR report was filed from the bank and uploaded into the database, it should never have been removed from there. And I side more on the side of that it's classified and Mueller somehow got it removed from publicly searchable portion of the database because it's classified. I think that that's more the answer here. But even if it had been deleted from the system completely and it was gone, and the person who may have feared that this last third SAR would also get deleted if they didn't release it or something, or they wanted to avoid that. If they were worried about the deletions, the bank themselves, when they crafted the SAR, made a submission. They probably have a copy of that. Anyway, the independent bank would have a copy of their own filed SARs, because even though the SAR is supposed to go into the FinCEN database so that nobody ever loses it, the bank's probably still going to have a copy of one they submitted anyway. And even if they didn't, the overwhelming information of the person's account never goes away. That ledger's there forever and has been logged from year to year and month to month, day to day. And so There's no way to cover this up by just deleting the SARs from the database. That's why I really think they've actually been classified. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And it's just more and more and more and more and more and more and more mounting evidence of what's going on with HR. The most amazing crimes. We are living in some amazing political times. And it hasn't hit everybody yet, but they're going to keep chipping away. And eventually, we're going to realize that supporting Donald Trump is only what enemies do. So Ken Perdman's out.